I left for Colombia with four children, Paul, Julianne, Kylie and Darren. Having been commended by the Imbolc Assembly, many difficult and unusual circumstances arise for many missionaries in foreign countries, but with the Smith family, recent experiences in their lives have been life-threatening and greatly stressful. Ed will certainly fill in more detail. Thank you, Edward.
Little did we expect when we left Australia about a year and a half ago that we would be back here again. But we're in the Lord's hands, and all that the Lord allows in our lives is perfect and correct, and we're just thankful to Him for each step of the way that He's led us. Now, there's just a couple of scriptures I'd like to read briefly. Firstly, Psalm 126 and verse 3. Psalm 126 and verse 3. The Lord hath done great things for us, whereof we are glad. And then over in Mark's Gospel and chapter 5 and verse 19. And the Lord said to this one, go home to thy friends and tell them how great things the Lord hath done for thee, and hath had compassion on thee. And then another reading in 1 Samuel chapter 12 and verse 20. And Samuel said unto the people, fear not, ye have done all this wickedness, yet turn not aside from following the Lord, but serve the Lord with all your heart, and turn ye not aside. For then should ye go after vain things which cannot profit nor deliver, for they are vain. For the Lord will not forsake his people for his great name's sake, because it hath pleased the Lord to make you his people. Moreover, as for me, God forbid that I should sin against the Lord in ceasing to pray for you, but I will teach you the good and the right way. Only fear the Lord and serve him in truth with all your heart, for consider how great things he hath done for you. We trust the Lord will just bless to us the reading of these scriptures together this afternoon. Now, we've read together in these scriptures with regard to the great things. And in the first reading we read, the Lord hath done great things for us, whereof we are glad. Just recently we had a gathering in Gympie, and I used this verse to commence there as well, the message. And the greatest thing that the Lord has done in our lives isn't freeing me and helping us with the problems that we've had of late with regard to my being kidnapped, but in the salvation that he has given to us. We know that our lives are but for a short span, but what the Lord has done for us in salvation is forever. He has seen fit to free me from that situation, and in a very short period of time in which I was held. But still the greatest thing that God has done in my life is when he saved my soul and when he brought me to himself. Now, since then the Lord has done many great things in our lives. And as we've read together there in Samuel is encouraging the people, and as we consider those great things that the Lord has done, we too would be encouraged to fear the Lord and to serve him in truth with all our heart. And so might this just be a few words to each of us this afternoon, that we might be encouraged, because the Lord has done great things in all of our lives, And might we be encouraged to go on and to fear him and to serve him with all our heart. For consider how great things he hath done for you. Now, this afternoon, we want to talk with regard to Colombia and to with regard to the matter of the kidnapping, for which we are indeed thankful to all the Lord's people for your prayerful and practical support to us during those difficult days behind. Now, firstly, with regard to Colombia, just for 5 minutes, Colombia, as you know, is situated in the northwest corner of South America, joined by Panama and Venezuela, Brazil, Peru and Ecuador. The equator passes through the south of the country, so it's tropical, but depending on the altitude as to what weather conditions you would experience in the country. You see, there's three sections of the Andes Mountains which comes down in this section of the country, and we have snow-capped mountains in Colombia all year round. But then there's areas around the coastal area, and also in this interior section here that's very low, and they're hot and humid parts there. Now, the assembly work commenced in Colombia mainly from American missionaries that came down and worked in this area and down the eastern coast, a little in Bogota, and down towards the south of the country. Now, some years later, there was also an English missionary in Bogota working there. Then some years later, the Australian missionaries came in the 70s, and the Australian missionaries have mainly been serving the Lord in this part here of the country. And I mention our fellow missionaries there, Australian missionaries, and would ask you to pray for them, because Colombia is passing through very troubled times. Colombia has always been a land of great problems and difficulties and bloodshed. And that is the scene that is going on in Colombia today. In Armenia, there's the Thompson family, Pareda, the Knots. In Chocó, Alan Shelley Moss were out in Ismina, but they are now shifting to Medellin because of that violence in this coastal area where they were. Then there's Byron and Lynn Johannesson in Tuluá, in Vaji, and in Manizales, that's where Len and Nerida Walker were, and now John and Ann Baker, who were commended from New Zealand, but John is actually an Australian. They are now in Manizales living and working into the state of Tolima. Now, when we went to Colombia back in the end of 1984, we went to Manizales for 9 months, where we did language study for 6 of those months, and then shifted to the north to Sincelejo. Now, in Colombia, this is the different states that you can see. The poorest state in Colombia is Chocó. The next poorest state is Sucre, which is the state where we have been living and working mainly. Although for us it has been a centre from where we have worked out with the gospel. Now, the work there started back in 1961 when a lady went across to Venezuela and was converted, and she returned to Colombia bringing the gospel. The great things that the Lord had done in her life, she came back and shared those with her family and with her friends. And so, little by little, different ones professed faith in the Lord Jesus Christ, and so there formed a group of believers here in Sincelejo. Because she was saved in Venezuela, the Venezuelan full-time workers and our Australian full-time worker there, Neil Thompson, they visited a lot in the early days and still visit from time to time to give help in the Lord's work in this northern part of the country. Now, the assembly was commenced in Sincelejo in 1969, and the first hall built there was in 1979. Now, that first sister that professed faith and took her faith home to share with her friends and with her family, she was a very evangelical woman, and she reached out to others with the gospel. That was her one desire in life, and still is. She's now living in Venezuela, aged, but still has that desire to reach out with the gospel. She heard of two sisters out in this town of Macahan, just a village out in the country. And these two sisters used to walk all over the mountainside and all the towns around, 2 or 3 hours walking, and they would preach the gospel. Well, she went out and she met them and she explained to them the doctrine and the truth of gathering to the Lord's name. And these two sisters came out of that group that they were in to just gather to the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. They suffered a lot of persecution, not from the Catholics, as was the case previously in Colombia, because there was great persecution from the Roman Catholic priests and followers, but they suffered a lot of persecution from the other evangelical people that were there in their town. The similar thing happened down in this place, right down in the south of the state, La Sierpe, and a sister from Sincelejo, and this is just in more recent years, she went back there to her village with the desire that the gospel would be preached there. Now, sometime previously, an evangelical group had been through there, and there were two believers that had remained there, but no one was visiting them. And so she started to meet with these two. Well, you can imagine it wasn't very long before the others were back. But she suffered a lot of persecution as well from those other evangelical Christians in that area. And on one occasion they circled her and they tried to convince her that she was wrong in the doctrine that she was following. But this sister, and it is very commendable to her that she had prepared herself well with the scriptures, and she could defend herself. She could tell them why we don't speak in tongues, why we don't do so many other things. And so finally they said to her, "You just keep going as you are." Well, we're thankful that in these areas today there's a better harmony amongst the evangelical Christians. Well, the work continued in this area. These two sisters always had the vision of seeing an assembly established in their town, and in 1988 they had the joy of seeing an assembly established there. The believers come from three small towns, Chinalito and El Cañito, and this area is very close to the mountain ranges. Now, where there's mountain ranges in Colombia, there's the gorillas, because that's where they hide out amongst the forest and the scrub in the mountains. And so it's an area which has been attacked a lot by the gorilla movement. And this is the area where I was taken from back in May. Now, the work in Sincelejo has grown, and we're thankful to say that there's 6 different Sunday schools being held. We're preaching the gospel in 4 different areas in the city. We have 3 halls in the city, but there's only the one assembly. But we trust that with time that other assemblies will be established, because that's our desire, is just to fulfill the commission of the Lord to go and to preach the gospel, to baptize those that believe, and to see these ones gathered to the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, that first zeal of that sister to reach out to others with the gospel has been implanted in the hearts of each one of the believers there in Colombia. And each one of them have a desire to reach out to their families and to their friends with the message of the gospel. And I think we could say that each place where we are preaching the gospel, in the north there's 5 assemblies. When we went there was 3 in Sincelejo, and down the bottom in Colcasia, Piemonte. The little assembly in Piemonte had to close because of the violence. But then Macahan, the assembly of La Sierpe and Los Manguitos have started. But in each case, it's because of interest in different members of the family that the gospel has been taken to these areas. The area where I was taken from. We were preaching in the jail in that time, about 10, 12 years ago, and a number of men had been taken who'd moved in on land just to be able to grow their crops. And the owner of the land got the police and army in, and they rounded them all up, took them all to jail. And so we were able to preach to these ones and others there. And of those 30 men that were there in jail, 3 of them professed faith in Christ. And one of them said, well, now, when I'm free, you have to come back to my town. There's a couple of believers there, and you've got to come there and preach the gospel. So we went there and we preached the gospel. Now that man, he was actually one of the ones that was kidnapped the same time as me. He and his wife, they hold 3 or 4 meetings during the week, and they gather people together, and there's about 20 that have professed to be saved out in that area. Down in Sumpues, the work started there. We have a Sunday school and gospel meeting there. One brother was visiting in the hospital, and the people that were there, they said, look, won't you come and tell us more about the gospel? And so the work has started there. In Chinu, there's a brother from Kolkasi, and his family live in this area. And so he had the desire for his family to hear the gospel. And so we've been preaching there too for about 10 years. He would come up at great expense to this small city of Chinu, and we would go down about 20 minutes, half an hour, and we would meet there and we'd have a meeting. Just the beginning of this year, we were able to build a hall there, and so the believers there have their own hall. There's no assembly there yet, but when we had the opening of the hall, that brother had the joy of seeing 44 of his relations in the company that were present at the opening meetings. And so it goes on. In Salgun, a couple was saved there. He's a school teacher. He teaches out in the country. He said, look, why don't we have a meeting out there? And so he goes around and visits, and we go down of a Wednesday and we have a meeting in the country at 5. Then we come back into the city of Salgun and have a meeting there at 7:30 at night. In Manguitos, there's the family of another sister down in Colcasia, and that was just after when the volcano exploded back in 1985 in Colombia, killing over 20,000 people. And she said, look, I'd hate my people, my family, to be ushered into eternity without ever hearing the gospel. And so we started visiting in this country area. And you'd wonder where people would come from, but at the hour of the meeting, there would be 60 or 80 or perhaps 100 people, and many of them had never heard the gospel before. And so in this way, doors have opened, and each assembly is reaching out with the gospel. And so we rejoice that even though there's so much violence and so many problems in the land of Colombia, the gospel is going forth. We have an open door, but of course we don't go in areas where we know there's violence and where we know that there is guerrilla activity. Now, the guerrilla activity, that stems back from a good number of years ago when always in Colombia there's been a lot of mismanagement of government funds. The political members always become rich overnight. And so because of this condition in the country, a guerrilla movement was formed. In the beginning, they were trained under Fidel Castro from Cuba, and they had started in a small way, but now this movement has grown over the whole of the country. Not only are there the gorillas that are dressed in uniform in the mountains, but there are many, many informants in the cities. When I was being held captive, one of the gorillas told me that they have 20,000 men in the mountains, and he said we have more than that in the cities. And so in Colombia, one can never speak about anything that is politically motivated. One can never voice their opinion on things. We just have to be very, very careful. And we just do what Paul said and his message to those at Corinth. We preach Christ and Him crucified. We've had gorillas in the meetings, and there they are spying. You see, you never know who they are. A person comes in and you're all happy that someone's come in to hear the gospel, but you don't know what there is behind his presence there in the meeting. Well, this assembly in Macahan, they decided, because their believers, some of their believers live in these other towns, there's no transport at night times, no one has vehicles. Colombians, we have the rich, the poor, or the middle class and the poor. Most of our believers are amongst the poorer group. So the only time they can all be together is of a Lord's Day morning. And so they decided that they would have a time of fellowship. They would have two Bible studies, one on prayer, one on fellowship, have a meal together, and to encourage these new believers out in El Cañito, they would go out there. Now, there'd been a guerrilla activity in Chinulito. We have a little hall there. And in years gone by, used to have a fortnightly Sunday school and gospel meeting there. The Chinulito is now a ghost town because of the violence. You see, we not only have the guerrilla movement, we have the paramilitary. And that's another group that has been formed, and they fight against the guerrillas. And actually, they're a lot more ruthless than the guerrillas. And so we have delinquents as well, and then throw into that the police and the army, and you've just got a very difficult scene. Well, we decided that we would go out there. This brother from out here, he rang the day before and he said, look, everything's calm in Chinulito, and in this area you can come out. So we went out and we took a group of younger Sunday school girls that had professed faith in recent times. We took them with us to be able to share with them in the studies and in the fellowship there together. Well, we were sitting under mango trees and just about to start when it started to rain, and it rained heavy. We all had to look for shelter under old houses that there are out there, and so we continued singing a few hymns waiting for the rain to stop. When the rain stopped, I decided I'd go across the road to a round rotunda with thatch roof, because it was the biggest area where we could all be together. You see, we were 60 or 70 people there, and just as I was going out through the gate, these five young men, all of them under 20 years of age, dressed just like civilians, some with short, some with long, some had singlets, some had t-shirts, they were just all, you just pass them by as any old Colombians, but they all had a gun in their hand, and they rushed into the yard of the house, singing out that no one was to move, asking for the keys of the car and asking for the driver of the car. Now, I thought at first that what they were wanting to do was to rob the car, to make a getaway. But it was very evident that they had other things on their minds. And within about 3 minutes, four of us had been taken, and together with the five gorillas, we were speeding off about nearly a kilometre out to the main highway in our vehicle. We continued from there, one of the gorillas driving at high speeds, and the other gorillas and some of the other brethren there were saying to him, look, just take things a bit quieter. They were worried that someone had rung up the army or the police or... And we assured them that no one would have done that, but the believers would be praying for us. And so we went another 10 minutes to this little town of Chinulito, and then we started to head bush. And we went down across the creek a few times and up mountains. Of course, it had rained. Everything was slippery. And this fellow, he drove the car to where I would never have been able to drive it, a Jackaroo four-wheel drive, put it in four-wheel drive and just gave it everything that he could. Until we got to a certain point, and then I said, well, look, we'll have to abandon the car here, and all of you just line up over there. And then they couldn't leave the car there because it was in the open, so they took the car back and they left it under trees in the creek. They did that because there's army planes and helicopters that fly over the area, and they wanted to leave it in a place where it couldn't be easily picked out. It was a bright yellow colour, so it would have been easily distinguished. But the army would never have known, because no one had telephones or anything like that, so no one would have known. But anyhow, they left the vehicle there. Now, I always forget to tell this bit, so I'll mention it now. Later, when the other three were released, the keys of the vehicle were handed over to them, and the guerrillas said, you can go back today or tomorrow, whenever you want to, and pick up the vehicle. It's there waiting for you. And they, one of them did that with another brother. They went out the next day and were able to pick up our vehicle. Thankfully, it wasn't damaged, and so we're thankful to the Lord for that. Well, after leaving the vehicle, we started to walk, and we walked for 5 hours. Up mountains and down mountains and down across creeks, and at one stage it rained really heavy. We just had to keep walking. We were saturated. We hadn't had anything to eat. Way up in the mountains, we came across a farm, and they found some like ripe cooking bananas. They gave us one of those each. It was about 1:15. Alright, we've got to keep walking. They allowed us to rest just for a minute or so here and there. Right, we've got to keep walking. And so we just kept walking. Of course, we were 9 in the group. One of the believers that was kidnapped, he had been injured many years before when a temporary bullring collapsed, and so he had problems walking. He was always at the end. And then there was one or two that were more agile. They were up in the front, and then I normally used to come in the middle. Occasionally I'd go towards the front. But during those 5 hours, we were able to speak with those gorillas and tell them about the Lord Jesus. One of those told us that he'd been an evangelical for 8 months, but then had gone and joined up in the gorilla movement. Well, we're thankful for the opportunity of being able to tell them the gospel. They never pointed their guns at us. We're thankful for that. They never blindfolded us. They never tied us up. They really treated us pretty good in comparison to what others have been treated. Just recently, there was a Catholic priest that was kidnapped for 5 days. They blindfolded him, took him on the mule blindfolded, fell off the mule, nearly fell down a big abyss down one side, because they're always up in the mountains. At night time, they used to tie one of his legs up to a tree. Well, thankfully, they never did any of that with us. So we kept walking. And just after 5 o'clock in the afternoon, we came to a little town right up there in the mountains. Actually, it's marked on the map here, a place called Chengi. And we went off down a side track. As we walked through this town, I was keen to see if there was a name on one of the buildings. And normally the school has the name on it, but the name had been blotted out. I asked what was the name of the town, and they said, no, this town hasn't got a name. And you know, even though there wasn't any name, there was one thing that really struck me in that town, just a small town right up in the top of the mountains, was that there were 2 houses there, and on the front door of these 2 houses there was a gospel text. The gospel had reached up into that place. Well, they had told us during the day that they were going to release some of the hostages, some of us, at some stage. Well, I knew that they weren't going to release me, because during the day they told us that a roadblock which was held in Makahan in December was to try and take me captive then. But I didn't go that day. The Lord wasn't the Lord's timing, you see. And I was at a Sunday school break-up in Sinsalejo. Then they told us how that one or two days before they'd been in front of our house in Sinsalejo, and they had thought to take me by force from the house, that it would have been necessary to kill someone of the family and possibly my wife to cause confusion to be able to quickly take me kidnapped from the house. But that day I'd parked my vehicle right in front of the front door, and they saw the danger. There's a police office just around the corner, so they decided to leave it. Well, we're thankful there again. We see the Lord's hands in so many things. You know, I was kidnapped. That was bad enough, but it would have been so much worse if one of the family had been killed as well. But anyhow, just going back to the family, after the kidnapping, you can imagine the state that the believers were in. God gave Ruth and Kylie a great calm, a sense of His presence. And they had that during the whole time that I was kidnapped. I had the same thing. Only once I was ever frightened a little bit, and that was travelling in the car when one of the guerrillas had a hand grenade in his hand and threatening to pull out the pin should we happen to find contact or make contact with the paramilitary. But God was with them, and they were able to encourage the other believers there. After having the lunch, they walked out to the main road and got a bus back to town, to the city, and then, of course, news was spread abroad about the kidnapping. Well, the Lord was with them and helped them during those days. They were trying times for them and also for all the believers and just for all of us. But there we were. They told us we could rest. They released the other three. We were able to pray together. One of them gave me his Bible to take with me. And so the last I saw of them, the three of them were walking off the hill. Well, that was good, because they could go home and tell them at home just what had happened up to that stage, because they didn't know what had happened, where we were, whether we'd been killed, or just what had happened. The last they saw of me was that I was riding off on a horse. They'd borrowed a horse. I had always said that, you know, if I was to ride a horse, it had to be an old one, and one that didn't go very fast, because I hadn't ridden a horse for 35 years. And, well, they assured me that everything was okay. Well, they had to belt the horse all the way, but thankfully they provided that horse, because we went on that horse for about 2 hours, and we dropped right down from the mountain. As we dropped down, one of them said to me, "Look over there, that other mountain." And I looked across. It was getting on towards dark by this. I looked across, and there, right up on top of a mountain, he said, "That's where we're going. That's where we're heading for." And it was really steep, and the sides were really steep, either side. Often, as we were going up, the gorillas would say to me, "Look, you just wait up there a little bit further," because the horse would go faster than what they could climb up the side of the mountain, just a track winding up the mountain. And so we went right up there to that mountain, and when we got to where they thought their camp was going to be, they'd been trying to get in contact by mobile phones with the commander, but they couldn't do it. And when they got to where they thought their camp should be, the camp had shifted. You see, the gorillas shift frequently camps. They get orders from higher up, and they just have to pack up quickly and shift. They always have their knapsacks ready. They always have a certain amount of food in their knapsacks. If it's necessary, they dig a hole and bury their the food that they can't carry with them, and in a very short period of time they're ready to go. Every day they pack up their bedding and their tarp that they sleep under, so at a moment's notice they can be on the move. Well, at this point, where they expected to find their camp, they managed to make contact with the commander, and we had to keep going another distance further. By this it was dark, and we waited in a certain spot, and another gorilla came, and he took control of me, and the other five went, and we never saw them anymore. We went about another 5 or 10 minutes on a side road until we came to the camp. It's not a real good drawing, but you'll get the idea of it. Of course, it was dark when I arrived. I didn't know what there was there. We came down this road here, and they told me I could sit down on a plastic bucket just near this path that was leading down here. And the commander came along, and he said, "Well, you know, what? How was the kidnapping, and how are you, and you know, you're hungry?" And I said, "Well, I could eat a bit." because, you know, we hadn't had much during the day. So he gave orders for one of the gorillas to go and prepare some food. And he came back, it was dark, in a small saucepan, you know, without a lid, without a handle either. And this was given to me, this rice and chicken and something to drink. Well, little did I know that the gorilla that gave me that food that night, because it was in dark, that he was known to me. About 2 days later, he started asking me questions about who attended the assembly in the town of Makahan, and I was suspicious, but I wasn't letting on. And then he asked me about a certain believer, and when he did that, I just looked at him and I said, "You're Sandra's brother." And I didn't remember his name, because they all have two names. They have their legal name and they have a makeshift name. And he just started to laugh. And he said, "Yes," he said, "I knew who you were." You see, he'd been in the meetings. We had given his father a pair of glasses, used glasses that we give out. And he knew just who I was. So in that area, there was at least 300 gorillas. Because in the week before there'd been a training session, there'd been 300 gorillas present. And out of those 300, there's lots of camps. There's about 16 to 20 in the camp where we were. And God had that man placed in that camp to be able to speak to their leaders and just to tell them who I was and what my work was there in Colombia. Well, whilst I was eating, they were putting up this tent here for me, just a tarp, a plastic sheet on the ground, mosquito net inside, and then they said, "Well, look, you can go to bed now, get some rest." Well, I went to bed to pray, lie down on the ground. Wasn't anything new to me, sleeping outside. Many years ago, I was a Boy Scout, and, you know, again, 30-odd years ago, but it all came back to me, and so I lay down there. Well, about 11 o'clock, it started to rain again. It rained heavily, and everybody in the camp got wet. This was the commander's camp here, and another one of the officers, and they were just all around this old house. Well, I sang out when the water was starting to come up in the tent, and they took me up to this house here, and one of them gave me a gorilla's shirt, and another one gave me a gorilla's trousers, and so I took off my wet clothes and I put on a gorilla uniform. It wasn't until then that I knew that there was another man there who was also kidnapped. And he was also wet through, and so he also received a gorilla's uniform. And they put a bit of plastic on the dirt floor of this little house. There was a lady about 80 years of old lived there. And they said to us, "Well, you just lie down there on the floor." Well, we spent our first night together, and we spent our last three nights together. Because on the last Sunday that I was in camp, there was a third man came in, a Colombian that was kidnapped. And of course, in the beginning, you can't speak to people. So we couldn't speak to him, and so we had to sleep together, just in a one-man tent. It was very close, but thankful anyhow. Of course, we'd made a very good friendship by this time. Then the next day, a fourth one came in, and so we were really getting a bit crowded. Well, the next morning I brought us down. We spent all our time just down in this little area here. This was a flat area. It dropped off on the three sides. A little bit of cultivation down below. There was avocado trees around. Avocados were falling all the time. And, of course, that was good to eat. But they did look after us. They gave us three meals a day. They'd come down and they'd ask us what we'd want to eat. They would then go and prepare. We ate fish, we ate meat, we ate chicken. We had rice, we had a few vegetables and those sort of things. So they were very kind to us in that way. But we just spend all our time here. Well, I would spend my days reading my Bible, praying. In the beginning, you can't talk to anybody, so, you know, very limited contact. But then as time went on, that was lifted. The next day was Sunday, and in that part there's no electricity. But the Colombians love their music, and there was a couple of farms down this road. In one of those farmhouses, there were some believers living. And they had a tape on and some gospel choruses. And so these gospel choruses came rising up from this valley. "I want to praise thee, O my God, and another one, we give thee thanks, O Lord. And that was just like the Lord confirming to me that he was there with us during all that trial. Well, that afternoon, the commander came and he called me to one side and he said, look, he said, has anyone spoken to you why you're here? And I said, no. He said, well, look, it's just because of the economic situation in the guerrilla movement. This costs a lot of money to maintain this movement, and we've decided that your ransom will be about $400,000 Australian dollars. When they rang home the next day, they asked for $800,000 Australian dollars. Well, I just said, he offered me the telephone to ring up and, you know, to organise the money. I said, look, that's just waste of time, waste of money, because it's not even a fraction of that. Well, during the days that followed, we were able to, I was able to make contact with home by means of a telephone, portable telephone. They would just give us a minute. There was always a gorilla standing beside me. Kylie was the one who did the communicating between home and the gorillas. But we're thankful for those six opportunities just to be able to speak so as they knew that I was alive. Well, Carlos, my friend, he was a Catholic, and I offered him the Bible. He said he didn't have his glasses, so I offered to read the scriptures to him. I said, look, Carlos, you just pick a number between 1 and 150. And he would pick a number, and then I'd read that psalm. And the Lord would always just give us some little portion from it. Carlos had a great appreciation of the Lord, and he said on various occasions, Eduardo, what we are suffering is nothing compared to what Christ suffered for us. And that was true. Anyhow, the days went on. Carlos always said that we were going to be released together. I'd say no, and he'd say, look, where's your faith? I said, in this I'm a man of little faith. You've been here longer than me. You deserve to go first. You're going first. We'd memorise telephone numbers and email addresses, and we were going to get in contact with the other's family. But we did finally leave together. On the 22nd of May, I was kidnapped on the 13th of May, 22nd of May, Carlos said, we'll read Psalm 23. I said, no, we'll read Psalm 22, 23 and 24. And then we read the Psalms. I explained them to him, again presenting Christ and his death and Christ's work for us now. And he said, we're going to be released on the 23rd. Well, we weren't released on the 23rd, but we did receive word on the 23rd that we would be released the following day. There'd been an agreement to pay over a small amount of money. It wasn't called a ransom money, it was called a handling fee, just to get over technicalities. But see, it's illegal to pay ransom fees in Colombia, although everybody does it. So it was agreed to do that. Two of the ones that were kidnapped took that money and met the gorillas in a certain place, and the agreement was that I would be released when the money was handed over. When the money was handed over, they said they will be released in a place about an hour and a half, 2 hours away. And so they had to get into their vehicle, into our vehicle, and drive to that place. We'd got up real early because they said sometimes they let the hostages go early, so we weren't going to be late. But, time went on and nothing. We had breakfast, and then a couple of horses arrived. One of the gorillas said, look, there's your cars arrived. And so we thought, well, we're going out on horseback. That's all right, we don't mind. But we never did get to use those horses. About 1:30, the commander came into the camp and he said to us, he said, just get your things together, because we didn't have anything, virtually. They'd given us a toothbrush and toothpaste. We'd been 4 days without it. And just mention that in passing, the hour's just about there. But one dear sister in Venezuela, she said, whilst I was cleaning my teeth, I prayed that the gorillas would give you a toothbrush and toothpaste. You know, people were praying all around the world, and we just don't know what they were praying. But that sister did say that to me. The first 4 days we cleaned our teeth with a stick and a bit of water, but then the Lord gave us toothbrushes. God does answer prayer. Well, we left the camp at 1:30, and I heard one of the gorillas, the lady gorilla, saying, this gringo, this foreigner, didn't stay any time here. And I'd only been there 12 days. You know, other missionaries have been held for over 2 years. We met with Wycliffe missionaries in Bogota. They came and saw us on our way out, and they told us how that one of their men had been held for 810 days and finally released. There's other missionaries from new tribes that are still being held in Colombia after about 7 years. And my kidnapping, my time was just 12 days. We give thanks to God for the answer to your prayers and to our prayers. Well, we left that camp, we had to walk, and we walked, and I've just got to cut it off here because of time. We walked a good distance, then a vehicle came, and it was the guerrillas' vehicle. They gave us a lift to a certain point there. They organised for a vehicle full of avocados to take us into the town, and so we went in, but because I didn't have identification papers, we waited outside the town, and after about an hour the Catholic nuns and priests went out, because the other man worked with the Catholic Church. They went out and he went in with them. They promised to come back. It was about another hour and a half before they came back for me and one of our brethren as well. And so it was about 7 o'clock. When we got back to town, we went straight through the army check that I was worried about because I didn't have any papers. And then when we got to town, there was about 20 or 30 police waiting there. And they wanted to do some questioning. But then another police officer arrived and he said, "No, release them and let them go." Well, we went and I said goodbye to Carlos and we went back home. We got home about 8:15 at night. It was a great reunion with the family. And just to again be free. Now, there's many details I haven't gone into, and feel free to ask later on if you wish. After that, we left the next day for Bogota, and then 2 days later for Venezuela. We were in Venezuela for 2 months, and now we've been in Australia for 2 months. And we're just waiting on the Lord with regard to the future. No one has said we can't go back to Colombia, but there's a tremendous amount of violence in the land. And so we're just waiting on the Lord. We're booked to go back to Colombia on the 30th of March next year. We will be going across to Venezuela, God willing, for our two children's weddings there, Darren and Kylie, both getting married in June. We'll be there perhaps for a couple of months. And we're just waiting on the Lord that he will direct us with regard to future service. So we just thank you again for your prayers and for your interest. And it's just a wonderful thing to be part of the family of God and to know that we can care and we can share and we can pray together as we pass through this life. How great things the Lord has done for us, and we're thankful for every one of them.